KYW Original Podcasts.
This is the Philly Soccer Show. I'm KYW Greg Williams, the Philly Soccer Pro writer Mike Shavedio. This week we talk about Ali Bedoya's on-field statement, the big win against DC, and the upcoming match against Houston this Sunday. Just me and Mike in the studio this week, but doesn't mean there's nothing to talk about. There is a lot to talk about.
Plenty to talk about.
Not only the world of your Philadelphia Union, but the world of soccer. And we will get into it all. So let's talk about the Union. Do we dispense with this first? The elephant in the room. The thing that catapulted, as you said before we got on the air, the Philadelphia Union into the national spotlight for a few brief moments. But they were there for a while.
Yeah. Talking about Alejandro Bedoya grabbing the field mic at Audi Stadium and passing along a little friendly message to Congress.
Yeah, and you know we try to skirt the news on this show as best we can. I kind of get a relief from it being my other cap. The other hat that I wear is news editor, so I get to get away from that world for a little bit and record this. But you know, it's sports and news and politics. They all kind of mesh sometimes, and soccer, you know. Outside of the United States, soccer is probably the most political sport there is. I mean, you know, so much nationalism is hung onto the national teams and even the club teams. And you'll get some of the stuff in Eastern Europe where it's so tribal and it's so, you know, and all of that. And, you know, look at Scotland, the old Firm Derby. I mean, you want politics, you want sectarianism. It's kind of probably not as it used to be in the old days, but it's, you know,
which is probably good for Scotland.
Exactly. But I mean, it's there and I think it's a good thing. And I think you learn a lot about these countries and societies through the sport of soccer. Yeah. And you learn just, you know, it's a nice cultural window into the different regions of the world and all that. But, you know, I'm digressing here. You know, Ali obviously reacting to some of the tragic news in America with, you know, two of these mass shootings within 24 hours, like three or four within a week. And you know, and one of those, which happened last year, going on 2 years ago now, the Parkland shooting, happened right near where Bedoya grew up. Yeah. And, you know, he was vocal about that. And that was obviously something that kind of shook him a bit that something in this.
Yeah, I remember talking to him about it then.
Yeah, in his hometown happening, and he never shies away. He's not a guy that shies away.
No, I mean, if there was anybody on the Union that was going to do what Ali did, it was always going to be Ali.
Yeah.
And, you know, it came across as a very Alejandro Bedoya moment, if you know the player a little bit, of very raw, mm-hmm. very impassioned, perhaps a little spontaneous.
Yeah.
Though probably not that spontaneous.
No.
But certainly, if there was a player on the Union that was going to do this, it was going to be him.
Absolutely. And like I say, he doesn't shy away from things. And be it what's going on the field, off the field, he's a great Twitter follow.
Yeah.
Follow. And, you know, he leads with his chin a lot.
He does.
He leads kind of, and it's burned him a few times. But it was just amazing that, you know, and it's the world we live in, how quickly it caught fire.
Yeah,
and how many people kind of jumped on it? The tweet was a national, you know, MLS ratings being what they are, but it was still a national game, and if, you know, if people were watching, a couple soccer players were watching, and just kind of, you know, grew out of that, online, on Twitter and all that, and it was like watching a game and kind of watching this blossom at the same time. It was really fascinating,
and the way that it kind of. Maintained through 24 hours too. You know, mm-hmm. I saw a number of the Union players backed Ali's statement and their Instagrams. People commented on Ali's Instagram. Jim Curtin publicly mm-hmm. backed the statement after the game. Marco Fabian. You know, I think it shows a little bit of the unity that's within the club and the team right now, but also that it's not a very controversial statement in that way either anymore, where we need to do something.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and again, I mean, we try to keep the news out of it, but it's you feel the frustration in the world over issues like this. And again, Ali's a guy with a big heart, and he's, you know, And he, you know, he has the different perspective lived in other parts of the world, and he talked about that a little bit. It's like, you know, his wife
that was really interesting.
Yeah, his, you know, his wife being from Norway, and just kind of the different perspective you get, and you know, just what's happening in the country right now. I won't delve too deeply into it, but you know, if you guys listen to the news and watch the news, you see what's going on, and you know. And it's interesting how the league reacted. It kind of, you juxtapose it to, say, the NFL, where we all know what happened with the NFL with Colin Kaepernick and other guys, and the reaction it got, and you know, people going online burning jerseys. I mean, that's a small percentage of people. I get that, but still, that's kind of that visceral reaction kind of happened. And you see the MLS step up, say, you know, he's not going to be suspended. You see Jim Curtin. I kind of reminded me a little bit of a guy like Greg Popovich, you know, stepping up and really defending his player and saying it kind of had that moment for me when I saw Jim do that. And it's just interesting. And like you said, all the players in the league almost, you know, lockstep getting behind Bedoya.
And you mentioned it too, the perspective that Ali did bring to this when he's talked about it on other outlets over the last couple of days. He's lived in different parts of the world and is married to a European person. And I think that maybe having some of the difference between the NFL and the MLS is that you have a more international league.
Yeah.
So you have players from around the world where that gun violence is not the problem that it is in the United States. So I don't know how much that plays into it, but like I said, I don't know if it's that much of a controversial statement at this point that something needs to be done about what's happening. So I think it's an easy thing to jump on and say, we need to be doing something.
Yeah, and you even see, you know, a guy like Lexi Lawless, who, you know, is a very patriotic guy, and when the issue of, you know, players kneeling, he came out and said, no, you don't do that. You know, I played for the flag. I wore the flag on my chest. He came out and said, you know, this is Ali Bedoya. He was not, you know, jumping on an issue to promote himself. This is Ali. He feels very passionately about things. This is something he felt passionately about. He took the moment and the stage to say something. And you know, there you go.
Yeah, I haven't. Did Jeff Cameron say anything? I know Bedoya and Cameron are friends, but with differing political opinions.
Jeff's who he is, and he's pretty outspoken about the kind of guy he is. He kind of took a swipe at Grant Wall, who wrote an article, and probably him and Grant aren't quite getting along at this point. Took a little swipe at that, but you know, in his statement, he said, you know, he wrote the hashtag and he had to do something, and he is friends, like you say, he's friends with Ali, and you know, they may not perfectly align and everything in the world, but you know, he backed them statement. So not politics. Let's talk soccer.
So after all that, the Union really kicked the crap out of the DC United.
Crap, they did to DC what they got done to them in two road games, and really just showed up to that game. And
I mean, I said this. I did the player ratings on Philly Soccer page, and I said this that. You know, it's 2-0 at halftime, even though Casper missed a penalty kick. DC was down to 10 men. I don't think any of that mattered. Because the Union were all over them before they were down to 10 men. DC was terrible playing out of the back and terrible in possession. They had Rooney, you know, basically playing long ball as a somewhat of a quarterback floating around the field.
Yeah, Rooney,
they were really
out
of ideas.
Rooney was deep. Like, I mean, he was lined up against Bedoya. I mean, that's how kind of deep he ended up. He was... You know, guys like Ali and all them were kind of lining up against. He was not playing. He didn't play very up high at all. And you've always kind of seen that. Like positional discipline was never Wayne Rooney's. Like he'd end up playing right back for United randomly some games. So you know that positional discipline wasn't always his thing. But you kind of got this whiff of desperation in him, just trying to make something happen. And on the flip side of that, a guy that's kind of been doing that. Marco Fabian, he played
his best game,
absolutely his best game, and that's the Marco Fabian they paid for.
Yeah,
the guy that's plays high, can run at defenses, just gives the other team fits because he's got good soccer smarts, knows where to be, you could finally see him getting used to his teammates, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's a big thing where he trusted them enough that he could stay up higher on the pitch, and he knew he could get the ball, and he knew when he had the ball, he had guys around that were going to do something, and he finally saw that.
Yeah, I agree. And I wonder if a little bit of that, particularly, you know, for the first 55, 60 minutes of that, is that you have Warren Cravall on the field.
Yeah.
Who you know is there to mop up things.
No, he's just the plow horse out there. He's the
I think having Cravall out there, and, you know, let Fabian remove that idea of playing defense out of his head and let him get higher.
And let's talk about Cravall. You know, comes
I
off
was in one a, of his best games in a Union shirt.
Comes off an injury where he misses, unfortunately, misses time with his national team with the Guyana.
I feel terrible for him. Warren is a terrific guy.
You know, he's the guy sitting on the bench, gets tapped on the shoulder. He's 90 minutes ready. He was out there ready to go.
Yeah.
For not playing or playing in spot duty. And, you know, he's the, you know, this phrase keeps getting kicked around, next man up. He was next man up, and he was out there. And he just, you know, did exactly what you needed him to do. He was just out there winning balls, playing defense, getting stuck in, doing exactly what you needed him to do out there.
Yeah, and I thought that you saw him kind of leading the line in terms of the Union being able to turn over DC at will for a good portion of that match within 30 yards of the DC goal, to the point where he ended up with an assist. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how many assists Warren Cravall has in his career, but it's probably not a lot.
Yeah, but I think you saw this system that was close to peak of this system of just the press, the ability to not worry about you turning the ball over, because if you turn the ball over, you're likely doing it in a very high position, and you likely have the ability to get the ball back quickly. You saw that. That's kind of built into the system where they don't fret over that too much. And you just saw them absolutely harassing DC before they could even catch their breath.
Yeah, and it was the perfect opportunity to do it. I mean, you're missing one of your best center midfielders. I think they were on their third center back by the time the one guy went down. So, you know, I think they saw a team ripe for the taking, and to their credit, the Union took it.
Absolutely, and that's what first place teams do. They see the blood in the water, they go for it, and they just played a wild game.
I mean, to go back to Bedoya for a minute, the first goal 3 minutes into the game was a great goal too. Yeah. I mean, it's good work by Andrew Wooten on the sideline to win the ball. Finds a creative pass to Marco Fabian, who I thought was initially going to miss the chance because I thought he had a chance to shoot that first time maybe, and drops a good ball back for Bedoya to ping in off the post. And to laugh at Bedoya earlier this season saying he didn't get any of those lucky shots that go through the defender's legs. He nutmegged the defender from 10 yards out and shot it through about four bodies before it pings in off the post. It's a terrific goal.
That was a great goal. And you felt like that took a lot of the pressure off of them, because I think just with the two road losses and a decent win against Chicago, but there was in the, you know, like I think Coach Curtin called it a professional win, but it wasn't like a thrashing. You know, it wasn't anything that said, okay, yeah, they're kind of back on track. And yeah, for your captain to step up and, you know, score in the first 3-4 minutes, that's huge. That's big.
Yeah, and talking about taking the pressure off too, that second goal right before halftime, you know, you know, DC's reduced to 10 men. Chibonko steps up to take the penalty and skies it over the bar. Not terrible penalties this year.
I'm not sure.
Three
of
the Union have missed this year.
Three or four and two on Fabian.
And Montero missed one too. So that's four.
Yeah.
But then they come back and they get a goal. I think 2 minutes later, which is another terrific goal. A great overlapping run by Kai Wagner. Harris Madunian right into the path, and then straight through to Fabian to belt in from the penalty spot. To have that two-goal cushion at halftime, huge.
Right.
And then the three-goal, to get up to three goals, it was over at that point.
Yeah, it was,
you know,
just
DC down to 10 men, even though they were able to score a goal, and I'm sure that the back line was disappointed themselves for allowing DC to get something in the game.
Yeah. But, I mean, it kind of turned into passing practice after a while.
The last 20 minutes of that after Montero got on was a lot of fun to watch. Mm-hmm. With Montero on and El Seno on, Harris having a really, really strong match, too. You know, it was the last 20 minutes of that were, you know, Union possession, like 15, 20, 25 passes, and then a pretty good goal-scoring opportunity. They probably could have had 7-8 goals.
Yeah, Harris, some of the stuff he does is so. Like, I think the ball he set Fabian up on where he kind of turned his body inside and put the ball outside, yeah. and just by just moving his hips was able to make the defense shift and open up space. And I mean, that's why, I mean, that's great. I mean, for, you know, like real, just a guy that, like, somebody watches a game as much as we do, you see like those little subtle things where he can just, you know, just do that. He has so much control over, you know, how he plays the game, and just was able to do that. It was like just this wild little moment. And it was such a great game. it was a game they really needed.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and to talk Harris a little bit more, I thought he took a couple of pops from distance, mm-hmm. which has been missing for parts of this season, and forced some pretty good saves. One of his strongest matches of the season. I think he had like over 120 passes completed.
Yeah. I think I texted you. I felt bad for Hamid because he was just hung out there. And
yeah.
He's a pretty good goalkeeper.
He made a dozen saves, too.
Oh, my God. I mean, he was DC's man of the match, which is hilarious, but forgot it, like, gives up at five. Yeah. But, yeah, I was starting
to... He easily could have been 8 or 9.
I was starting to feel for him because he was just out there by himself, pretty much, and, like, his defense just hung him out there. You fell for him a bit.
Yeah.
Not a lot, but a little bit. It's tough. Apart from the penalty, there's really not... You don't really see any negatives in that game.
No, I thought Aurelien Collins stepped in and played a pretty strong match.
He's always good for kind of a bonehead foul. He did that, and that was fine.
Body checked some of the Philadelphia Flyers. I was going to say,
that was an open ice hit. I mean, that you know, obviously led to the goal, unfortunately. But yeah that was a, you know, that was an open ice hit out there.
I'm sure Shane Gostisbehere was very pleased to see that.
Seriously.
But other than that, I think he filled in pretty nicely. Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting to hear that it was a performance issue that kept Austin Trusty out. Not that I necessarily disagree with the move. I think Trusty has taken a little bit of a step back this season. I thought Colin came in and did a mm-hmm. professional performance. But you wonder where the leash is in terms of that with the right back situation, because Ray Gaddis has been as culpable as Austin Trusty
More in some cases.
Is it that you just have less depth there? I mean, you're still waiting for Olivia Biza to come back, and I don't know where RJ Allen is.
Yeah, if Allen didn't play that game, I'm not sure what game he is going to play after Ray put in 2.5, 3 really bad performances. Yeah. I mean, Coach Curtin didn't want to like single him out, but he had some tough performances.
Yeah.
And
so do you see Austin coming back this weekend against Houston?
It depends. I mean, it depends how you manage the situation. If it's a situation, say, hey, you're scuffling a bit, take a seat, you know, see the game in a little different way, and let's bust in training and see where you're at. And I have a feeling that's how they're going to manage it. I don't think there's any issues above and beyond just that. He's having a sophomore slump. He's going backwards a little bit. And, you know, it's okay to give him... You know, a benching isn't fatal, you know.
Yeah.
Especially this stage of his career. He's still developing. We forget how young he is. He's still developing. And it seems like they're managing these situations a little better than maybe they had in the past couple of years.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think Jim Curtin has grown as a coach. I think Ernst Tanner is involved in with some of these decisions and probably, hopefully, whispering the right things in Jim's ear.
I think so.
I think it'll be interesting to see how it plans out, because I think it could go either way. You know, I know Jim has been reluctant to change the team after wins, particularly the back line. But also, it could be a situation where you give Austin a game to watch and say,
yeah, I'd like I. And this gets depending where Mark is, but I don't know if I want to give Kalon consecutive starts.
Yeah,
I think he's probably fine in a spot start here and there, but. I don't know if you start seeing his age a little bit, if he's out there more than like in like 2 or 3 games.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either, but I think if you can't start Trusty and his head's better and he has a good week training and all of that and you kind of got the message, and yeah, I think you got to put him back out there.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah,
I think you'll probably see Jamiro from the start.
I think so. Yeah.
It's nice to see him back.
He looks great.
Yeah, I think a couple of passes that went astray, but you know, I think
that's fine. I mean, by that point, it didn't really matter.
Yeah.
I think he comes back. I don't know if you start up top. He tried Wooten and Shabelko together.
I thought they looked good.
I did.
And then Fafa came in and got a goal.
I liked Wooten's. He's kind of a handful physically.
He's a big guy.
And you saw that.
He's
like,
got some technical prowess.
He's just got that strong upper body and that good balance where defenders were kind of, he was just like dragging guys around. I mean, yeah. in the first goal, I mean, that was pretty much his physicality kind of started that move where he was kind of out on the left and just was able to bully the ball and get, and like, you know, make something happen with it. So he was intrigued. I mean, Shabilko's a big guy, but he's not like a bruiser quite like that. So you have that kind of dichotomy out there. I think that will work.
Yeah, and they're a handful together. Two really big guys.
Oh yeah, two six, you know, guys over 6'3", 6'4", you know, 6'3", 6'4".
And I think the chemistry for Wooten is coming a little bit more.
Yeah.
So if you can give him another start, and I think you have the opportunity. Though, you know, I think Fafa made an argument. I thought he came on and played pretty well.
Yeah.
He did score a goal, a well taken goal. These are good problems to have.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And
I was thinking about this before. Did you forget that Sergio Santos was on the team?
A bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I still don't know what to think of him. I mean, he hasn't played that much. He keeps dealing with injuries, it seems like. We heard a lot about how he's the fastest guy. I thought he would come in, he'd be in games, have a few moments, and just kind of not be there again.
Yeah.
And his finishing, I don't think, was ever there. I'm talking about him like he's not on the team anymore. I mean, he still probably has a role on the team, at least through the end of the year. I think you're going to be a playoff team, and you're going to be top of the conference as long as this. You kind of need everybody. And he's going to be a guy you need, I would think, at some point. But, yeah, his finishing wasn't there. I thought he had a lot of opportunities where you need a guy who's a striker to put the ball in the net, and he just blew those opportunities.
Yeah, I think the sample size is so low.
It is. No, it really is.
So it's hard to really figure it out. But I think it's a great it's great to see how successful the team has been without one of their big summer signings really coming through. I know a lot of the talk has been about Fabian not quite living up to things so far, although you know, maybe he's turned the page after DC. But you know, Santos is certainly not been what we thought he might be, and unfortunately, a lot of that is through injury. But you know, I think that they've been just fine without him. You know, they were able to bring in Wooten, and I don't think anybody saw what Przypalko's brought to the team.
And that's the amazing thing. It's like they made the pretty big signing in Santos, and then accepted that the situation changed because of his injuries and whatever, and he wasn't giving what he needed. So they went out and got Wooten, which is not something I don't think Ernie would have done.
No, it doesn't seem that way.
as a player personnel guy, you probably got to swallow it a little bit when a guy's not working out. So it's probably tough to say, okay, this guy's not working out, I got to figure out how to fix this. And I'm sure you got to swallow a little bit of pride that somebody you touted isn't doing what you want them to do. But they did it, and they went out and they got Andrew Wooten. And, you know, again, small sample size, but he's looked pretty good.
Yeah.
So Houston in town.
Yeah, you got to think there's got to be a little bit of a revenge factor for this one, and the fact that Houston beat up on Philadelphia in the Open Cup final last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Not two teams that have a lot of history.
No, but you think that cup left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths.
I think so.
Especially going into it, a lot of people felt like that was Union's best chance out of the three, because that was the first time they were really, on paper, the superior team. And on record, they were the superior team.
So I do think that that'll play into it a little bit, although the teams have certainly changed a little bit. I think Houston has been up and down all season. So I think, you know, coming into Philadelphia, that you have to look at this as an expected 3 points for the Union.
I would think.
And certainly you'd want to continue what you did against DC and, you know, put in a performance like that where it's feisty. It is, I think that they were on top the whole game, and you'd like to see that at home still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and definitely. I mean, that DC game is a game you can build on. You feel like you can build on because not only did you win, but you did so many things right, and you did so many things that you've talked about that how this system should go, again, about the pressing, about the ability to get the ball and move it quickly, about the ability to kind of shake off turnovers because you know you're going to get the ball right back. And they were doing, and I don't think a lot of people talked about it. This is something I noticed going back probably to New England, the draw against New England. This team wasn't getting a lot of second opportunities, it felt like. They weren't getting a lot of second balls. They would get the ball forward, maybe have a touch, and it would just die.
They got every second ball against DC.
What's that? And they second, third, fourth, you know, and I don't think a lot of people, I'm not saying I'm super genius because I figured this out, but it was just something I started to notice. Like there was just in this run where they were mediocre, I guess this is, you know, it wasn't really, you know, a bit of a down trough for the year. They've been a bit mediocre through this run. And it just felt like those second opportunities were never there for whatever reason. I don't want to say they weren't working hard enough, but they were just weren't in the right position to take advantage of things. That was gone in DC. They were in the right position, you know, from the opening gun. And hopefully that's something they could look at, you know, break down the tape and say, okay, this is what we did right. We got to keep doing this right.
Yeah, I agree. And I definitely noticed that against DC, that they were first to the second ball, to the third ball. They won just about everything. And I'd love to see that continue.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the interesting things about the matchup with Houston is, you know, you go back to that stretch of home draws and the loss against Portland, where you saw a series of Western Conference teams come into Talon and bunker a little bit and play on the counterattack to some success.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to the fact that, you know, Portland was able to win, Seattle grinded out a really boring draw.
Yeah.
And I think Houston is going to come in and do the same thing because that's the way they like to play. They like to play on the counterattack. They'll probably sit behind the ball and let the Union try to come to them. It's going to be interesting to see how the Union have adapted to that against teams at home. You know, I don't think Chicago played that way, and you haven't had that many home games over the course of the last 2 months.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be a really fascinating thing to watch and see how they've adapted.
It's going to be interesting, and I think the key to that is Fabian, because he was kind of the guy you brought in to open up a defense and to be kind of that X factor in offense that is going to be unpredictable and tough to play for a team that's just bunkering, where he wasn't playing or he wasn't integrated, for lack of a better word, into the offense enough. It's really difficult then to go up against the disciplined, you know, two lines of four setup like we've been seeing, or two, you know, a line of four and a line of five even.
Yeah.
Where you've seen that a lot. But if he's much more integrated and playing better and again, fitness was a factor because of the injuries and just red card and just not being on the field. Fitness was a factor, and I don't think he looked the fittest he's looked since he's been with the Union in D.C.
Yeah, and I think he'll get an opportunity to see the Union's first-choice midfield for at least the first half, probably the first 60 minutes on Sunday, where you'll have Jamiro start, you'll have Fabian in the 10, Bedoya on the right, and Harris holding. You know, and you think if that group can get it done and you know, hopefully the score is, you know, 2-0, you can take Montero off, bring in Warren Cavall maybe, shut it down for 25 minutes and grind that out.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm excited to see that midfield because we haven't seen a lot of that midfield.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
And I think it'll bring even more out of Fabian to have him with Montero. They're just two guys that haven't had enough reps together that I think can be super dangerous.
Yeah, him and Montero together could be just something special. It's just his, you know, Montero's ability to win the ball, and not only win the ball, just to do something with it when he has it, and to have an outlet like Fabian who will get it and will look up for his find his strikers, or you know, Bedoya, you know, run into the box to be that extra runner, you know, where he could shuttle it off to Bedoya and he becomes the extra runner.
Yeah,
you know, which I think is his game as well.
And it's a huge difference to have Montero versus Cravall in that situation, because Cravall would win the ball, and you could see him in the final third, particularly, just go, somebody else can have it now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not his game.
No, it's not. Fine. No.
It was kind of funny because he got himself into a couple of decent shooting positions, and I was like, oh, and it didn't happen. But
right. No, he's.
But Montero is going to crack those.
And absolutely.
I mean, I had to think, you know, Montero coming into the DC game after seeing some of the positions that Cravall was in, like came in with his lips salivating.
It is amazing. He's such a What is he, 140?
Yeah.
If
small
he's that
guy, smaller than me.
And he could just blast the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets his foot around a ball. He could just annihilate it. You see a guy, you know, keeper make the saves, how hard it comes off their hands.
Yeah.
Just how hard that ball is hit from distance.
Did you see the video that the Union put out today with Montero and Shabalko shooting at the targets?
Oh, no, I got to see
style. It's pretty fun to watch.
Oh, wow.
It's on their Facebook. I think it's on Twitter, too.
Probably a clinic.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, they're pretty good at hitting the targets.
Yeah, I bet. So, prediction.
Union should win 2-0.
I'll go three zip.
All right.
I think they're going to want to get that they're going to want to get that clean sheet.
Yeah, I think so too.
That probably they should have had it in DC, except for getting that free kick. But so yeah, and hilariously, I mean, you mentioned it that the Union beat DC so bad, Wayne Rooney is going to go play for Derby.
Yeah, player coach after the season. That's an interesting move. I don't think a lot of people saw that coming.
No, you start seeing the kind of rumors of it. I'm like, okay, why? But all right, and. Then 18 hours later, he's sitting there in Derby, like wearing their jersey, and it's like, this is weird.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting, you know. And I mean, it seems like he's gonna leave after the MLS season is over. So he'll be joining, you know, Derby kind of midway through the championship season, a little less than there. And if he's gonna go over there and play soccer for Derby County. The championship is not an easy league. We talked a little bit about the championship.
No, it's
week.
A physical
it's,
league.
It's play, a lot of games.
He played his midweek games in the rain.
The Tuesdays away at Stoke.
Right.
Yeah, you get one of those in the championship because Stoke is in the championship.
Can you handle a cold night in Coventry? You know, you hear that all the time. It's like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Wouldn't he rather an away game in L.A. or something like that as opposed to?
It's interesting.
I don't quite get it, and apparently it's a free move. And after DC put out a lot of money to bring him over, and I don't know if they recoup that in jersey sales or ticket sales, but it's still a hunk of cash that they sent Everton's way.
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting to see how it works out for them because they seem to have taken a step back this season after kind of rebounded into a pretty solid squad at the end of last season. And you know, I don't think Rooney was as good as he was last year this season. And I think, you know, a couple of their other players have seemingly taken a step back too. Yeah. So, you know, with their DP caliber offensive player leaving, where is that going to leave them?
I don't know. And Ben Olsen, I know he's like a legend down there, but the charmed life he's living as a coach. And You take Rooney out of there, and like you said, he's got to cobble something together without, you know, a guy that's been your focal point for over a season now.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I know he's a local guy. You know, we love you, Ben, and you got the local roots, but it's going to be tough.
Yeah,
for sure.
I agree.
They're on a journey through breweries and watering holes throughout the region.
It actually tastes like apple pie in a glass.
Okay, I'm getting it now. Now I'm getting the pie.
John McDevitt and Paul Kurtz are the Beer and Booze Bros. Don't miss any of their podcasts.
That's all I need, another addiction.
On the radio.com app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What else we got to talk about?
Let's talk about the Matt Doyle article that came out today.
Yeah.
So if you haven't read this, it's on MLS.com. It's a kind of a reboot of something that Matt Doyle does at the beginning of every season, kind of dividing all of the teams into tiers of how far they are along as an organization, with LAFC being in the tier by themselves, some other really good teams in the Union kind of falling in this second/third tier.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that Doyle did comment on, and I think it's an interesting talking point, is in the past couple of years for teams making runs through the playoffs and into MLS Cup, there's been one guy that has kind of just put the team on his shoulders, whether it was, you know, Giovinco and Altidore for Toronto a couple seasons, and you can go back to Almiron for Atlanta last year, and questioning who that player on the Union is. You and I talked a little bit about this before we came on. I think that there are a couple of candidates. You're getting Jamiro Montero back, who I think is kind of the fulcrum of the team.
Yeah.
You know, you have a DP player at your 10 with Marco Fabian. He's not been quite exactly what you thought he was going to be, but seems to be rounding into form. And if he gets into that form, maybe he becomes that unplayable guy. You have the captain of the team who we've talked a lot about today is Alejandro Bedoya, who is a guy that, you know, is not a guy that is a super flashy player, mm-hmm. but a guy that gives you so much grit and a guy that will make a play when it counts.
Yeah.
You've seen him score big goals for this team. You've seen him lead this team. So I think that there are a couple of players in this group that could be that guy.
I think it's either Montero or Fabian.
Yeah.
And it's weird to talk about Montero being that guy, being he's kind of a quote-unquote defensive midfielder. But as we all know, his game's multidimensional, and he could take over moments of games just with his ball-winning ability, his playmaking ability, his ability to be positive and move the ball forward. And he's this thing, you know, that makes the Union tough to play against, where they're kind of always in your face, and they're always trying to force the turnover, and they're always trying to get teams to do something dumb in a bad spot. He's the poster boy for that, because he's the guy that's going to harass the ball carrier. He's the guy that's going to clog passing lanes. He's the guy that is going to press a player into an uncomfortable spot where that player makes a mistake and either turns it over to him or makes an errant pass. So again, it's these subtle little things that he does that you might not pick up on initially that could create, you know, chain reaction that leads to a goal.
Yeah.
And with him healthy and him out there doing that, yeah, he's a game changer mm-hmm. from his position. And it's weird to think of a guy that's not a purely offensive player be a game changer, but he absolutely is.
Yeah. And I think one other guy that I would include in this conversation as another game-changing type player is Elsenio off the bench.
Yeah.
It's that no one has Elsenio off the bench besides the Philadelphia Union.
No.
And he's such a wild card and adds such an element to things. You know, you go back to the game against Red Bulls, you can picture that happening in the playoffs.
Yeah.
You can picture, you know, if it's the Red Bulls, if it's DC, if it's Atlanta, whoever it is, you know, a team up 2-1, a team up 2-0 against the Union, and the Union's like, we're bringing in Elsenio, and it changes the game.
Right.
And I think the other thing that I see is maybe there is not that guy on this team, but there is a committee on this team.
I think there's
always something to be said for that. And
that kind of struck me, too, from what Doyle was saying. Like, this team is greater than the sum of their parts.
Yeah.
And which is, again, it's a weird cliche. But you see it, though. I mean, you see this mentality of somebody, there's always, there's 11 guys on the field, there's always somebody that's going to try to pick up the slack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's that mentality that, you know, Coach Curtin talked about, you know, what's our mentality? Are we 4, 5, and 6, or are we 1 or 2?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that mentality is kind of that selflessness where there's always somebody that can step up for the other guy and, or do something maybe a little out of their playing character, but it's going to help the team.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, Bedoya talked about that a little bit. He didn't, you know, in this 4-4-2 system, he doesn't see the ball as much as when he played deeper, but it's working, so you deal with it, you know?
Yeah, and I think this team is good at using some of this stuff as fodder, too.
Yeah, for sure.
I think our friend Joe Tainsey was tweeting a little bit about this right before mm-hmm. we recorded today, and I think, you know, he made some good points of that this Union club is good at taking these things that come out of the media and you know, whether it was, you know, some of the guys getting snubbed in the All-Star game or, you know, the team kind of consistently being treated as a second-tier type MLS team, they're okay taking the underdog role, and they want it in that similar way that the Eagles used it to win the Super Bowl a couple years ago.
I mean, you saw it, you know, and when he was kind of at the height of his powers, you saw Jose Mourinho with Chelsea, where he could convince a room full of millionaires that they're underdogs.
Yeah.
And he could convince it because he got guys to buy into it because they saw it could work. And you're seeing that to a degree with that they're buying into the mentality, you know, it's us against the world mentality, and we're Philly and nobody likes us. And they say, you know, we're cheap and, you know, we don't do this. We don't get this guy. And, you know, we play down Chester and all that. And they're using it. You know, it's all badges of honor that they're
and it works inside the canon of Philadelphia sports too.
Absolutely.
It's how the Eagles won the Super Bowl. You go back to where the Sixers have been for the last 10 years and the trust the process.
I mean,
the Flyers have their, always been
the muckers and the muckers and the grinders. Yeah. You know, that's
But it's brought a level of success to the sports teams in the city, and there's no reason it can't work.
And it's funny, you know, John Hackworth would say it a lot, the Philly tough thing, and always, just with that squad, it always kind of rang a little hollow, because, you know, you heard the talk, but you never saw it.
It was always a little hard to take out of John's mouth, because John's such a happy guy.
Yeah, he's a happy guy from Florida, you know? But, you know, you hear Jim say something like,
maybe it does come with a little bit more credence.
Yeah, it does with
a Philly guy,
right? Exactly, and that mentality, you know, just that you know, I'll say it again, that next man up mentality.
Yeah.
So, all right, should we wrap it up in a moment?
So Premier League starts. That's exciting.
Prem is starting.
How are you feeling about your Arsenal?
I feel a lot better about them than I did a week ago.
Yeah.
I think they had a really good window. It turned out they got Pepe.
Yeah.
Big signing.
Yeah.
This Tierney guy from Celtic sounds like he's coming in as promised, and he looks like he's going to be their solution at left back. And I still think, you know, David Luiz at center back. I still think it's not ideal, but I think he'll do a job for you.
Yeah, and like I said to you before we started talking about Luiz, he's one of the best center defenders in the league against 70% of the Prem.
Right?
Is he prone to a mistake here and there?
Right.
In some of the bigger games, yeah, he is. But, you know, is he going to do the job against Sheffield? Yeah, he is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you got guys that are pretty good that now you have a little more solid back line. I think the guys in front of them that screen you, I think they have a little more confidence. So I think they'll play better. So I think it's going to have that effect. I love their attack. I think their attack is as good as anything. And you know, if they're not giving up cheap goals and they're just being solid in the back finally, where they just have that mentality, you know, that strong defensive mentality in the back finally, I think they'll be good. I mean, are they top four yet? I mean, they were so close last year. They just had that the road record was so bad.
And I don't know about you, but I'm predicting another season similar to last year. I think that City and Liverpool are 1-2.
Yeah,
I think they're a step above everybody else.
Yeah, and I think the fight's for number three.
Yeah, and I think Arsenal's there. Chelsea is there. I don't think United is there.
Not United did very $85 million from McGuire. Oh my god! And we'll see how long the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer honeymoon lasts.
Yeah,
some interesting teams back. You know,
Villa's back up.
Yeah, you know, I think the Premier League lacks something without Villa because they're such an old team and a lot of history.
They've won the league.
I think the top flight, you know, just lacked a little something without a team like Villa being up there. Sheffield's up. They're kind of a. We'll see how long they stay up.
Probably going to go back.
Yeah, we'll see how long they stay up. So you got some interesting teams coming up.
Yeah. I think it'll be interesting. I love kind of figuring out the mid-level teams too. You know,
right.
I think Bournemouth is a really fun team. I've really enjoyed them. I know when they came over and played the Union a couple of seasons ago, we got a couple of minutes to talk to Eddie Howe. He made me a fan. Just chatting with him.
He's a quality guy.
He seems like a good guy. He's a good coach.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's gotten a lot out of that club.
It's great seeing a British coach kind of get a chance where, you know, it's such a catch-22 over there. It's like, why aren't there more British coaches? Well, why aren't you giving these guys a chance?
And,
you know, they get a month to, like, turn something around. Oh, you're gone. It's like, you know, that's why the Bundesliga is always more interesting. Because, I mean, there's a lot of pressure in that league, but it's not such the we have to win immediately concept up there, you know, in the Bundesliga, where it kind of is in the Prem, obviously. Yeah, I think it's going to be a good year.
I saw that Cameron Carter-Vickers went down to Stoke on loan for the season. I think that's a nice move for him.
It is. Yeah.
He's not going to get a run at Tottenham's team.
Yeah, he needs minutes. He needs time. And
you know, going down to the championship, we just said, tough league.
Mm-hmm.
You've got two American center backs down there too, because Matt Miazza is playing for, right. for my Reading Royals.
You learn your craft down there. That's for sure.
Yeah, you do. So I think it's going to be a fun season. I'm excited that the Prem's kicking off again.
Absolutely.
I'll try to have it on all weekend probably.
Yeah.
I think I might sneak out of work tomorrow to catch the Liverpool game.
Oh, they kick off what time? Like two?
I think it's 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock.
3:45.
So that'll be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great to have the Prem back.
Oh, so good. You know, I think the person that's least excited is my wife.
Same. You know, I got to find time to kind of sneak in the basement and throw it on. And
yeah.
I had to
own up to buying the Premier League package through NBC the other day. And she's like, oh, I saw it on the credit card report. She was like, does it start soon? I was like, it starts on Friday. She's like, it just ended. I was like, it's football, honey. It doesn't end.
Soccer never ends.
It's a beautiful thing.
I think I might splurge for that for the NBC.
It's $60.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
And it's tough because you miss so many. Because the way they kind of allot who's on the gold channel, it feels so random. It's like, oh, Arsenal's on this. Oh, crap. They're, not going to get to watch it this week. So.
Yeah. It's fun. I go back and watch games that I know the results of, too.
Right.
If they're good games.
Well, that's good. The playback ability is nice. And,
yeah, it is.
If you want to check some highlights and stuff.
And you combine that with some of the lower leagues, like the championship gets usually two games a week on ESPN Plus. You can watch a lot of English soccer.
ESPN Plus is great. Oh, you get Eredivisie.
Yeah.
You get Serie A.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You get championship. It's great. ESPN Plus is,
I'm getting excited just talking about it.
It's a bargain. Be a bargain at twice the price. All right, guys. I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll catch you next week.